Thank you. Thank you. "It's a plum, you dunce," mutters a rather impressively ill-dressed hotelier. The fit of his clothing seems intentionally wrong, yet somehow imbues him with an exacted air of servitude that had not yet been rivaled amongst the Observatory Hotel's seasonal catering crew or management. He is, like his contemporaries, clad in a bellhop cap and shoulder-tasseled coat. His cheeks are sunken like dunes that then incline upwards, spiking into twin cliffs that somehow buttress his coin-shaped eyes in place. One eye moderately sagging to the east, as if it were a gumball melting free of a clump of ice cream.
Thank you. Thank you. love that so much.
Between these hillocks basks a pronounced nose, the only flattering appendage that grows from his face. His nose, at least ostensibly to most, seems to be his sole excuse for the remaining commentary one could contribute to his face. He had once been explained by his science-minded acquaintances, of which he had many, as that freckled European with baseless black shark-like eyes. Oh, you know, the Observatory Hotel. How are you forgetting him, Dorian? Ah, the Aqualine manager, yes. However, if he was remembered, he was just as easily forgotten, and unfortunately, he was terribly aware of this fact. One becomes aware of their tediousness after a many countless reintroduction, and one's knowledge of his purposelessness in the eyes of others fuels a secret furnace deep inside him. It was one and the same for Marcus Berth, the Observatory Hotel's complimentary food service hotelier. As we speak, his arachnid-like shadow plays over a complimentary grouping of irksome, pig-like juveniles, wearing embroidered cardigans and matching toques. Marcus hunches obsequiously with a certain inauthenticity, and their freckled vacancies are eclipsed by the shadow of the glassy chestnut serving tray, quivering with a gelatinous sundry of garish hors d'oeuvres, one as ambiguous as the other. In this way, the descending tray is reminiscent of a portly and counterweighted deus ex machina of some variety, descending into a Russian opera house and allowing a moment of specific clarity. The children's saucered eyes act in accordance with the descending tray. As the hotelier moves among them, the light of the night sky bathes their faces in its pure light, and the children shine a flaxen white like fresh snow, blindingly white. They embody an overdeveloped daguerreotype photograph flanked in a mound of bleached flour. The bronzed chimera upon which sits a tabor of glistening cantaloupean fish eggs is lowered into view. The children's tiny porcelain hands immediately grasp for they know not what, and from their punctuated positions on the floor, with mindless and rapine impulse, the tray is immediately emptied. In sudden, impish astonishment, the hotelier halts in contemplation. He is now staring at his reflection through the remnants on the mirror base of the serving tray. A self-actualization settles within him like fragments of quartz and deceased salmon scales at the bottom of a slow-moving creek. It comes all at once and in stark contrast with his profession. He turns his head upwards in lieu of the children's artlessness. His distasteful remark, he thinks, while fully disregarded by his present company, was the catalyst of this momentary shift in his attitude. The lack of effect relinquished from his snide utterance is all at once humbling, and lifting his head to the night sky as seen through the gallery terrarium windows, now conscious of these barons' influence upon him, the scant white of his eyes enliven like misty pearlescent mirrors, and he fumbles reverently, adding to the youth but in earnest to himself, "Focus your eyes, you'll see it." A young bob-haired brunette, one of the listless motley crew, glares upwards in question after the thought-provoked hotelier absently disturbs her thin and tidily arrayed strawberry-brown scalp. The hotelier is now humbly bent like a truncated monk. He exhales, resolves himself, and exits the observatory in an upright and servitudinal fashion, where he then vanishes beyond a long charcoal black satin drape to some ill-lit basement galley. And with such gravity does he exit the viewing gallery that one might query whether they'd ever see or hear from him ever again, due to his sudden miraculous presentiment. Meanwhile, a dissonant melody issues from a massive phonograph with a stained wooden horn. It coalesces with dampened conversation as the events coordinator carefully steps into the moth-eaten spotlight at the edge of the group, where they stare upward to the heavens. This batch, he thinks, are much like the rest, modern type, fortuitously picturesque and pervasive like Blackberry, yet possessing the demure qualities of a ballet tableau, in wait like rapacious visual predators to the illusory plumcraft. The plum craft, advertised to them in Latin-dad font, in velvet, adhered to sandwich boards burgeoning with royal-colored balloons in Casper City gallerias, enlivened by marching bands and confetti and whatnot. And then the event coordinator, his hands cleft behind his back with a calm temerity in his porous, stubbled face, aged adequately and befitting his position, and the observatory gallery antiquated, dark, with the exception of downward jutting spotlights for ambiance. It lends the EC a peerless and omniscient air. His careful and parental wanderings, his balding head upturned like the rest, but comforted by the often mystified and questioning childlike intensity in the gallery. A smallish and extremely dark-skinned child points upward excitedly, revealing his hallucination of the proverbial fruit. His Lilliput lips and yips and glow in the dark teeth are convincing enough and seize the attention of the group, who undulate in his direction in a murmuration. Other more dissentious attendants stay still, making observatory appear as that of a moonlit koi pond, rippling from the center outward. But alas, there is no plum craft, only the imagination of a young boy to gawk at through 8 inches of glass. A plum, they say, a plum. All I see are stars and black. It's been 3 hours now, Janet, rebukes a tired man with the physiognomy of a bulldog. His wife stands next to him as if she were his cane. She is cross-eyed and wears prescription glasses. Apparently her name is Jane. The dog-faced husband is perspiring and convincing himself he's exhausted at not having glimpsed any such distortion. The juveniles of the group point in amazement and breathe foggy ovals into the concave glass that wraps from mid-ceiling, abridged by wooden ornate Victorian applique, to the base of the floor, irritating the visually illiterate man even further. Overhearing the dog-faced man, the event coordinator goes about awkwardly but skillfully sidestepping the group until he is audibly within reach of the man and his wife. Yes, a very subtle black plum, as he packs his wet Cavendish into a cob pipe, surprising the dog-faced husband. Odd, isn't it? Why should it look like a plum of all things? Patience now, his voice utterly certain. Takes a bit of diligence, but you'll see it. The younger attendants have sharper eyes. Then lighting and roasting the chamber, pulling, while concluding his thought. Oftentimes more capable than us dinosaurs at locating the craft. Exhaling a thick smoke that mingles with the spotlighting overhead, he pats the man about the shoulder as if to say, good dog. The dog-faced man softens a spell and is deciding whether to smile or not. The dog-faced man, upon realizing he is already fabricating one of his many patent smiles, leaves it at that and turns to look up at the night sky once again. His wife, Jane, dutifully blots sweat from his sweaty canine brow and resumes her cane-like stance. The EC then speaks back in a meter, plants his feet squarely, and folds his broad and sun-reddened firearms, one over the other, pipe hanging sturdily from his narrow lips and overhanging his frothy ivory mustache. A dusty blonde woman with freckles and tight-fitting blue jeans overhears the EC's advice and sheepishly approaches him at the back of the viewing gallery, tugging at her groin-length button-up cotton shirt. Nerve-racked and mouse-faced, entering and exiting the shafts of light in the gallery like a garden snake in broad daylight, she endeavors to not be noticed upon approach. However, her movements are so odd in comparison to the majority of the group that she not only easily catches the attention of the EC, but of that of half the remainder of the viewing room's assemblage. Having been discerned, she halts momentarily, then reddens and stamps forward, vexedly, as if her own hexed existence had been revealed easily to any onlooker, as if her diary sprang open amidst a wanton crowd on a windy beach without her say-so, and seen by her at a considerable distance, perhaps by quarter-driven telescope. Unintelligibly, she mutters faintly at a fair way off from the EC. "What, pray tell, did you say, my dear?" endeavors our events coordinator. With a ripening red growing in her face, and her coarse blonde hair developing a now standing rigidity, she posits, "You are Geoffrey Martingale? Are you my father?" the GMG? A wan flush overtakes the EC's scarlet cheeks, and the pipe drops from the carpeted mustache like an overripe persimmon in a silent alleyway.
This guy's loving the atmosphere.